Thanks so much for listening here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. This coming Saturday from noon to 10 in Milwaukee, there's a grand opening celebration of something called Milwaukee's Market Space Project.
Makerspace.
Why do I say marker? Makerspace. I'm sorry. And the co-founders of Milwaukee Makerspace are with me today in the studio. And this comes, by the way, as a result of a listener who sent a note on the Facebook page or sent us an email and said, hey, why don't you talk about that kind of program? So Judith, in her great efficient way, found our two guests who are co-founders of Milwaukee Makerspace. And we'll learn all about this DIY, do-it-yourself movement, and how you might get involved in it. And I hope you'll join in with your own questions and comments as we move along and talk with our two guests. Tom Gralowitz and Royce Pipkins are the co-founders of Milwaukee Makerspace with us. Tom, thanks for joining us.
It's great to be here.
Yeah, and Royce, thank you so much as well.
Thank you.
So, Makerspace, what's the concept? Yeah, how'd you get involved in this?
Well, you know, it started back in 2001. I saw an episode of BattleBots, and I lived in Atlanta at the time. I learned very quickly that BattleBots were very expensive, and I got into a local scene called the Atlanta Hobby Robotics Club. And I did that for a while. Then I moved up to Milwaukee for work and switched over to the Chicago Robotics Club. Continued on there, but I met Tom at the Chicago Robotics Club. And after a while, we started to diversify, not just robotics. We started doing general electronics and other types of things. And at some point, the hackerspace, makerspace movement came to my attention. I saw NYC Resistor, a fairly famous hackerspace in New York, have a contest. It was a soldering contest that they held in a bar. And it was just a wonderfully social event. It combined technology and socialization. And I saw that and I was like, wow, that's really cool. I would love to participate in something like that. And then, looking on the web, I started to see more and more makerspaces out there, and I realized that there was a movement going on. And at some point, I turned to Tom and said, "Let's make one here in Milwaukee." And so we embarked.
Yeah. and you're and the grand opening is Saturday.
It's this Saturday. Yeah. For me, it was a little different approach to this. You know, the makerspace, which is kind of a culmination of what I've been trying to kind of do or wished I'd had my whole life. I mean, since I was a little kid, it's take it apart, take care of the pieces, try to build something or make something out of it. And it's been everything from, you know, little toys and trinkets to electric cars and cranes and bulldozers and who knows whatever else I can come up with that I think I need or have a project for, a winch to haul shingles to a roof built out of spare parts, whatever. And as a result of this, and for me, there's a bit of family history, too. My father described himself as a Depression-era baby, born in the early 1930s, lived growing up in that time where you didn't waste anything. You didn't, you know, throw it away when you were done with it. You saved it and tried to use it. So he kind of imparted that on me. So I'm a bit of a pack rat. I keep seeing things and thinking, you know, maybe I have a use for this later. Let me set it aside. And over the years, these piles got too big. And I keep thinking, well, it's useful. I don't have a use for it, but maybe somebody else does. So I'd always look for people that were doing projects and saying, hey, you know, you want to build this here? I got something you can use. And this kind of snowballed for me into the Robotics Club. I've been a member of the Robotics Club in Dallas, the Robotics Club in Chicago. Royce and I formed a Robotics Club in Milwaukee. About 5 or 6 years ago, I decided I finally wanted to build my own electric car, and we wound up growing in a Milwaukee Electric Car Club out of this. And all it is a bunch of people helping each other build whatever project they want. So I've been doing this for a while. And I got to the Royce and I were talking about this, and he pointed out this New York City Resistor, this, you know, let's make this a fun social thing, not just a place where a couple of, you know, geeky or nerdy types sit in a corner and build stuff. And sure enough, it's literally a worldwide movement. There are hundreds of these things around the world, and it's a place for people to meet, to socialize, to share knowledge, share skills, and share tools. So there's a formal definition of it, which Royce remembers better than I do. But I look at the makerspace as, you know, where I want to work on my hobbies. Mm-hmm. Whether it's working on my electric car or a little electronic circuit to make a light blink, the materials are there and the people are there. And it gives you a lot of ability to do things you wouldn't be capable of doing in the past. Say, you know, I wanted to be able to build a crane to hold something, but I needed to be able to make it out of steel and I didn't know how to weld. Well, at the makerspace are people who know how to weld, and there's welders there. So you just go in there and say, hey, you know, I want to do this. Can I get some help? And someone will sit down and they'll teach you how to weld and they'll teach you how to cut steel and they'll teach you, suggest how to pick the pieces. So it becomes this giant resource and a community to build or make just about anything.
Just about anything.
Yeah, the community is really at the heart of it. Like Tom said, it's a pooling of tools and talent. It's a place where you can go to get inspired, for one thing. Something else that Tom and I did as part of the Robotics Club was have Robot Builders Day Out. And we found that it was people gathering together once a month to work on their robots together. They weren't necessarily working on one robot. Each person was working on their own robot. And we found that we were a lot more productive when we were in those sessions, you know, as opposed to sitting in a home workshop or something like that.
Scratching your head by yourself.
Right.
Right.
So, you know, it's very easy to walk over to somebody and lend a little assistance or ask a question. And we got lots more done. And that was sort of the empirical evidence that there was really something to the makerspace concept.
And is this a franchise?
No, it's just a movement, really. There's no official connection between any of the makerspaces. There's an effort underway called the School Factory to link some of them, but it's in its nascent form. The vast majority of makerspaces really have just sprung up just by the virtue of the internet, sharing knowledge and sharing information. It's really sharing of knowledge and technology and all that stuff are really at the core of it, and it's in the very fiber of makerspaces and the makerspace movement.
It's sharing. It's really a grassroots sort of thing, and there are no literal bounds on this. There's no sheet of paper that says here's what a hackerspace or a makerspace is. There are some makerspaces, hackerspaces, where all it is a room where a bunch of people bring their laptops and write code together, whether it's web pages or programs or whatever. And then at the other end, there's places like ours where there's a bunch of tools and machines. But we also have a couple of rooms, and there are people that have come in and sit down and work on their software, work on their computer programs or whatever. It's a matter of what the members want to do and what the members want to have access to. And that's what drives it and creates it and turns into whatever it turns out to be.
So is it run sort of like a health club from the standpoint that you come when you want to? And
absolutely. Very much so. We do ask. There are dues for full members, and that's what helps pay for the space and pay for the heat and the utilities. Mm-hmm. But other than that, once you're a member, you get a key card. You can come and go anytime you want, work on any project you want. There's material at the location, at the makerspace. There's tools. If you know how to use the tools, you're welcome to use them anytime. If you don't know how, you're supposed to go through a training class and get certified on the tool. And the training class half the time is one-on-one. Somebody who knows how to run the machine walks you through the safety, walks you through how it works and how to use it, and you can go from there.
Talking about this great concept, it's Milwaukee's Makerspace Project. It's sort of a part of this do-it-yourself movement with our two guests today, who are founders of the Milwaukee Makerspace. Tom Gralowitz and Royce Pipkins are the co-founders. And maybe you have a skill that you've learned and want to pass on to others, or maybe you want to learn something on your own and have a question about it in relation to Makerspace. I hope you'll join. And maybe you've got some experience of this on your own. Maybe you've done it sort of informally, as these guys have done over the years, and now they've kind of got a little more organized. I hope you'll join us at 1-800-642-1234, or you can email us at talk@wpr.org. And Royce, you're kind of, I think you described yourself as a skills collector.
That's right. That really, really gives me an amazing satisfaction to take on something and say, wow, I've seen other people do this. I think I can rise to the challenge. I can make something that I think is really cool, that is just looks impressive. And I, you know, one of the ones that I'm most proud of is this, the ability to design my own surface mounted printed circuit boards. So you know, since a child, I've thought that electronic circuit boards just look cool. They're very colorful. They're very intricate. You know, if someone put in a whole bunch of effort into designing this this really complex machine. And you know, back in high school, I actually had the opportunity to trade out high school credits with a vocational school. This was back in the day when they thought it was worthwhile to troubleshoot electronics boards at the discrete component level and repair individual transistors and things like that. And now they just throw them away. But at the time, there was this vocational school that offered the program, and I was able to get high school credit for it, and that got me started. And I started reading on the web. I started experimenting. I talked to Tom, and Tom and I collaborated a little bit on developing our technique. We learned how to use a substance called press and peel, where you print out your design on a laser printer on this type of cellophane, and then you iron it onto a piece of copper coated fiberglass. Then you dunk it in ferric chloride, and it eats away. Ferric chloride destroys copper, but not where the toner from the laser printer has protected it. And so now you have
this
pattern.
I've seen that process. Yeah. It's really cool.
Yeah, and it makes some really sharp-looking boards. And to be able to create something from scratch that ordinarily I would have to buy, you know, if I wanted to get into the Arduino movement, for example, I don't have to necessarily go buy a $30 Arduino. I can make one. And in fact, I did. One Thursday night at Tom's house, I made a board that's roughly equivalent to an Arduino. Got it operational. So, I've made custom motherboards for my little robots that like mini sumo wrestling robots. So, I've made a system that controls a door to our makerspace through a wireless key card, and I made that completely custom from scratch. So, it just acquiring that particular skill and using it to create something brings me a lot of joy. I call that the joy of creation. And I tell you, I was hooked the first time I really made something. That was my first robot back in Atlanta, and I'm sort of glad no one
ever since.
Yeah, I'm sort of glad no one was there at that moment, because I was running up and down the hallway of my little small apartment hooping and hollering because my robot was doing what it was supposed to.
Tell you what, we got Lee and David on the line to talk with you guys, and we'll be back right after a quick look at the news. Stay with us. Happy to have you along here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here. We're talking about a new outfit that we have in Milwaukee. It's called Milwaukee Makerspace, and it's a great project, part of the do-it-yourself movement. And Tom Gralowitz and Royce Pipkins are the co-founders of Milwaukee Makerspace. Great to have them along to talk about what they're doing. Place for you to go if you want to work on a whole variety of things and meet with some other people. So it's kind of a place to get things done, but also a social place as well. Great to have them here. And again, you can join us at 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org. And Lee and Oliva is up with a question for you guys, so let's just go right to Lee. Hi, Lee. Thank you for waiting.
Hi. Thank you, Larry. Great show as always.
Thanks.
I was wondering how you guys got started and what kind of a space you have, and if there's any other places like this in Wisconsin.
Royce, you want to start?
Yeah, the way we got started, I guess, was we started putting the word out. We started from the Milwaukee Robotics Club and the Milwaukee Electric Car Club, and we gauged entrance there. We started putting word out using Meetup.com and Craigslist, which turned out to be actually better than the Meetup.com. But we started holding meetings without a space. We'd hold them at a Culver's or whatever, but we would have a weekly meeting. And over time, people came and they went. But once we sort of kept putting the word out there over, and it took like 12 or 13 months, people started accruing. And the way we rented the space was we had a concept of a founding member, where someone plunks down $600 plus a $100 a security deposit in exchange for a one-year membership once the space actually opened. And that gave us our initial pool of cash that we used to rent the warehouse where we are now. So we're in a 3,600 square foot warehouse. We have additional space that's immediately attached to us that we can expand into as we grow. We have a couple of offices and a machine shop and a vehicle bay, so where you can work on cars. And there are definitely other makerspaces. Right here in Madison, there is Sector 67. And then in the greater Appleton area, there's a space that there's a kind of a hackerspace movement that is not quite to the point of getting a space, but I believe they're working on it, called the Distributed Hacker Maker Network. And I apologize if I got the acronym wrong, but there's a group of guys out there, DHMN. If you Google for them or look for them on Twitter, they'll come up.
And so that's the founding member, but a person doesn't have to shell out.
Once we got founded, once we opened the doors, we said, okay, now we're open to regular memberships, and that is, with a $100 security deposit, again, just $80 a month, or we have some discounts for if you buy in bulk.
Mm-hmm.
So that's and now we have quite a number of members. We have 7 or 8 of those type of members. Mm-hmm. We had 13 initial founding members.
Okay, and another 8 or so have joined up since.
Yeah, we just got our 21st. Yeah, 21st this week, I believe.
Very cool. Thanks, Lee.
Thank you.
Yeah, appreciate the call. Darwin in DeSoto, Wisconsin. We're on to you now. Hi.
Good morning. How you be today?
Good. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Oh, wow, very interesting hour. But anyway, I was going to chirp in with back in 1975, I made my first $1 million mass-producing motorcycle frames.
Ah.
And I did it on a minimum, 1 frame per day, and things were running good. I did 2 frames a day, and I sold worldwide via Easy Riders magazine, nothing to it. And then for local advertising, I didn't put no ad in the paper. I drove a drag racing motorcycle, Top Gas, and I used that up at Carlsbad, halfway between Los Angeles and San Diego, you know. And it was 40 feet below sea level. I couldn't ask for better air on Earth. And I was running high nines, 150, 256 miles an hour. And it works so much better than ad in a magazine.
that's such a great explanation of what a makerspace is. There is certainly the potential for a makerspace to grow products and find people to help you design and build something to sell and start a business. That's part of the model of a makerspace, is somebody who wants to do that and has an idea for a frame but doesn't have a welder or doesn't have the space to do it. You can become part of the Milwaukee makerspace, work with the space. We ask that you donate some percentage of your profits to the space to help pay for it, but it's a great way to launch a small business like that.
Yeah, yeah. We've got at least 3 people working towards that right now.
Oh, that's excellent. Yeah. Thanks, Darwin, for calling. Appreciate your call. And let's turn to Jim in Winter, Wisconsin. Hi, Jim.
Hi, how are you?
Good. Thanks for calling.
Hey, a couple questions on the makerspace. The guys rented a warehouse, correct?
Yes, yeah. They rented a yes.
Okay, and I heard you guys talking about people working on cars. Did you have to have somebody come in and do an overhead door? You know, what kind of power upgrades did you have to do with the warehouse?
This
and that and the other thing.
Right. The only upgrade we actually had to do was to make a hallway to connect our next door neighbors to the bathrooms, because we would have cut them off. So we had to build that wall. Our warehouse comes with an overhead door. So,
oh, it did.
Yeah. So yeah, that was one of our criterion that actually factored a lot into our search. Is, you know, we had the electric car club. We knew they were going to want to bring cars in. So any space that we rented had to have an overhead door already. And, you know, the really commercial real estate, that is not in great shape. So there's a lot of space to look through.
Yep.
So we were able to come up with a nice space.
Very okay. Cool.
All right, thanks.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. You can join in with your own questions or comments. Maybe you've even got a question about something you're working on. These guys are pretty handy. They might be able to give you a little advice, too, especially in the electronics area, but elsewhere as well. I know somebody had called earlier and wasn't able to hang on, but wondered about whether or not he could come to your place and make drums. You know, drum for musical.
Yeah, drum. Absolutely. This is we were mentioning this when we were off air for a minute, and you'll walk into the makerspace with an idea like this and saying, hey, you know, what I'd really like to do is make a drum for, you know, maybe a church group or something else, but we don't have any money. We don't want to spend it on it. What's there that we can use? And I'm thinking, well, I know where there's a place where there's some 12 and 14 inch diameter PVC pipe that's in the garbage. We could just take a piece of that, cut off a chunk, make it the right length. Now we got to come up with some kind of a drum head, maybe an old inner tube, piece of rubber. You could actually buy a commercial drum head and strap it on it, but it's more fun to make something. You know, I wonder how long a bag of potato chips would last as a drum head. Mylar's pretty tough stuff. You know, okay, well then now how do you attach the drum head? Well, you've got to make a ring around it to hold it down and pull the drum head tight. Well, that's where the mill or the lathe or just a piece of wire and the welder come in. You can take some metal that's laying around, bend it into a shape, weld the ends together, put some bolts on it to pull it down, and now you can tighten the head. And in the matter of a couple of hours, boom, you've got a drum you can at least start experimenting around with. So, yeah, absolutely. This kind of stuff is what we're here for.
And we should mention that we do have a couple of open-to-the-public nights. You know, we're obviously a membership-based organization. Normally the door is locked. But Tuesdays we have our sort of business meeting, and the public's welcome to come to that. And, you know, it's a great time to meet the members and decide if they want to join. And then Thursdays is just an open house where people get in and work on whatever they want to work. They can use the tools. You know, if they've been checked out on the heavy stuff or small stuff, they can just use the space, use the people. That's really the most most important thing, is ask questions, get help. So you don't necessarily have to be a member. If you come in on Tuesday or Thursday night, it's free.
And when you talk about equipment, before we go back to the phones here, what kinds of equipment?
A lot of the stuff we started out with is kind of used and surplus, but there's a lot of metal machine shop stuff. We've got a mill, we've got a lathe, we've got some metal cutting band saws. There's certainly some woodworking equipment. We've got a couple of table saws and a chop saw. We've got a belt sander. And then there's a whole lot of the miscellaneous stuff, the drill presses and hand drills. We've got a little small sheet metal brake roll. We've got, you know, welders and plasma cutters. And we've got a couple of laser cutting machines, one that needs some work and one that we've just got the lasers for. So we're looking for someone who wants a project.
We have a CNC router that a couple of members built on the first month that we got there. And that's
less than a month. They started from a pile of parts that cost them nothing, and now we're able to carve and cut wood and light-duty metals to whatever shape they want.
Excellent. Nick in Green Bay, we're on to you now. Hi, Nick. Thanks for calling.
Hi. I just had a question for you, because I don't have the knowledge to do it, but I'm an amateur radio operator, and I was looking for a really long time for a thing called the 10-meter beacon, and no one sells one. You always got to, like, modify a radio or something, and I think that would be a great idea. Would you guys have the knowledge for something?
Surprisingly enough, yes, we do. At least one of our members is a ham, so he's got the direct knowledge there, but enough of us other people have got electronics knowledge and things like that. And my understanding of the beacon you're talking about is basically a transmitter that sends out the same message over and over?
Exactly, yeah. And I've looked on the internet, I've looked, and finally I just got a radio and built the controller myself, but there's no, like, pieces together where you can just buy it and put it on the air. Everybody's got to modify stuff, and you could make lots of money if you could just...
Exactly. You know. It wouldn't take much at all to build that, pretty much, except for the radio transmitter. There's components and microprocessors and controllers and stuff at the space, and people who know how to build them and put them together. It wouldn't take much to put something like that together, and then if you really think there's some value for it, there's kind of two ways to go. Obviously, you can try to make it and sell it as a product, but another way to go is to put it in open source. You design it, you lay out the circuit board, you write the programs, and then you publish it all on the web and say, hey, anybody who wants one of these, here's what I did. You can make the exact same thing.
Yeah.
And this is actually kind of part of the making movement. You'll see a lot of this out there where people are taking designs and things they've built and just publishing the description.
And it's worth pointing out that those two approaches are not mutually exclusive. There's big businesses. SparkFun sells tons and tons of stuff. They're 10 million of volume, and they sell gizmos for which, in addition to the product description, they have right beneath it, here's the schematic, here's the source code, here's the design files for the circuit.
There you go.
Thanks.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. Tom in Appleton was wondering if Royce and Tom could offer some tips for a group in Appleton wanting to start a maker space. And you did talk a little about how you started yours, but what about advice for those in Appleton?
what worked for us was just having weekly meetings. And another aspect that I probably failed to mention was go ahead and pick a space to you know, someone's house or their garage to gather around and start a group project. I think that really helped us. One of the group projects that we did before we had a space was the Power Wheels Racing, and that was an initiative started by Pumping Station One in Chicago, the hackerspace down there. And the idea there was to take little children's electric vehicles, Power Wheels and Tiny Tikes, and gut them, take the little weak safety motors out of there and replace them with things like 1,000-watt scooter motors to make them go way too fast. And you know, I have to do all sorts of other things. You have to add a steel frame because we're all too heavy for the load limits of Power Wheels. And we have to cut them up just to be able to fit inside of them. But they said, let's modify these Power Wheels, and then let's go to Detroit for the Make Magazine's Maker Fair up there, and let's race them in front of a crowd. And so we bid into that, and that before we had a space, and we gathered at Tom's garage, and we built these things, and it brought a lot of people in. Gave us that sense of community. It gave people a taste of what it's like to work together. And, you know, getting advice, getting help, get hands-on experience. You know, I learned to weld during these sessions, so it can make believers out of the people who come. And then, of course, you know, you have to keep the meetings going, keep that sense of community, keep the announcements flowing on Craigslist and Meetup.com and exactly. whatever media outlets
the meetings are what starts feeding the social side of it. Mm-hmm. And we had a weekly meeting at a restaurant. We'd all just sit down and talk, but we also built things. And I was expecting Royce to mention the other little project we built before we started, and that's that we were looking exactly where you are. How do we get people to know what we're doing this? And we thought, well, how about a parade? So we went ahead and we built an entry for the St. Patrick's Day parade. And being the tinkerers and mechanics, we decided to make giant cauldrons, pots of gold, that we could drive through the parade. So we scrounged around. We found some old wheelchair motors. We found an old scooter. We put the whole thing together. We wound up with two of these things. And we entered it, and they put us in the parade, and we drove right down the parade with everybody else with these crazy things, just kind of driving around. And it was all built out of parts and pieces we could find. But it was something that we all got together and worked on. There were 20 of us working on this over the course of a couple of weeks.
Oh, that's cool. Glenn in Cuba City wonders how you handle liability insurance.
We had to search quite a bit. We did find a company that would write us a liability policy. We do ask the members to sign an agreement. Part of that agreement says that they won't sue the space if they get hurt. Mm-hmm. And the other thing we do is most of the equipment, at least the more expensive equipment, is actually owned by a member and leased to the space. So if the worst absolutely does happen and someone winds up with some serious injuries and the insurance doesn't cover all of it, the makerspace doesn't really own anything. There's nothing in there worth suing for. Our concern there is not to deny anybody the money. It's to make the makerspace survive. You know, this is something that's a community thing. It's shared by a lot of people. I don't want to see it disappear because there was an accident.
Annette in Franklin wonders, are there women involved in makerspace? A lot of these activities tend to be done by men.
Well, I didn't mention the sewing machine at the shop. One of the other members also brought in an embroidery machine. It's like a little home sewing machine, but you can plug a computer into it and draw designs and sew those onto things. Yes, we do have a few women. They're not as many as we would hope. A lot of that seems to depend on the type of makerspace. The group in Chicago is more of a computer and programming and web development stuff, and they've got a larger percentage of women. We're very much a physical stuff, hardware and whatnot. But you get people in there, and there's nobody that says a woman can't learn to weld and build something. There's no reason not to.
Absolutely not. I wanted to, before I forget about it, was talking about other, you guys have mentioned other organizations and other groups, and I did want to remember that tomorrow at 3 o'clock on Here on Earth, our another program on Wisconsin Public Radio, Laurie Skelton's going to be talking about the do-it-yourself kitchen movement. There's quite a kitchen movement where people can actually prepare food you don't have to have your own place. You can go to this particular different spots actually, but one in particular she's going to zero in on, I'm pretty sure, where you can actually go and do your cooking, and you're doing it yourself, and you can have a business that way using that place.
That's very interesting.
Yeah, that's cool.
It's the food version of a makerspace.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it's the food version of a makerspace. Exactly right. And she's going to talk about that on Here on Earth tomorrow at 3 o'clock, Lori is. Pam in Madison, on to you. Hi.
Hi, how you doing?
Great, thanks for calling.
This is so wonderful. I'm wondering what would need to happen to get this into schools. This is exactly the kind of processing of thinking and creativity that's completely missing from education today.
That's a really great question. I don't know that we have all the answers yet. At one time you had shop class and things like that at schools, but they've largely disappeared. There is a group working on that. James Carlson with the School Factory is trying to envision how we can leverage the concepts behind the makerspaces and the hackerspaces to get them into schools. I don't know if I have the real answers. Tom, do you have thoughts?
I'm going to give you the other side of that coin. It's my father was a teacher for 30 years. I'm 100% behind this. The flip side of that is, in order to get the insurance, we had to say nobody under the age of 16 in the space.
Wow.
We do write our memberships as a family membership. So if you join, your entire family's welcome. If you do bring a child in, you've got to stay with them at all times, and they shouldn't be running the big, heavy, dangerous machines or the welders. But there's no reason why you can't bring them in as part of a father or mother along with them as an outing. And we've had plenty of that.
So maybe one way to think about it is to do presentations or auditorium presentations, even to take it beyond the concept of shop class. This is about creativity.
Yeah,
and this
exactly.
is about anything can be made from anything, and anything in your head is possible.
Exactly.
Yeah, definitely a sort of a self-guided thing where they would need to have the people around with the skills that could sort of guide them and show them. So there wouldn't be teachers really, but there would be at least mentors hanging around.
Yeah.
And build something.
Yeah. Thanks, Pam.
Wonderful. Mm-hmm. Thanks so much.
Yeah, appreciate the call. And Bill in Madison, it's your turn. Hi, Bill.
Yeah, hi. Sounds like a great program here. I'm finishing a Mendel rep ramp, and I joined the program late. I'm sure you probably already talked about this. But it would have been fun or very useful for me to have someone who was more knowledgeable than me when I got to the electronics and some of this stuff. So my questions are, where are you located, and do you do training on some of the machines that you have there?
Yeah,
we're based in Milwaukee at Chasen, Oklahoma. If you go to our website, milwaukeemakerspace.org, you'll find directions and maps and an invitation to the grand opening. The machine he mentioned, the RepRap, is a homebrew, an open source version of something that you're seeing in industry a lot, which is what they call a 3D printer, a machine that you can take a computer program, describe something in three dimensions, a police whistle, a chess piece for a chess game, or a package to hold your iPod in a certain way. You program it into the computer, and then you send the data to this machine, and it makes one out of plastic. We actually do have what's called a MakerBot at the warehouse, which is a smaller version of the RepRap. All of these things run off of open source software. They run out of open source designs. You can actually build the whole thing from scratch with the information you download off the web. And it's all stuff that's people in our makerspace have explored and learned about, and they're happy to share what they know and what they've learned, how to make these things work and how to make them do what they want.
Yeah, bringing a RepRap or something like that into the Milwaukee makerspace and asking for help is a great thing to do on a Thursday night where it's open to the public, where there'll be a lot of people there, and somebody's going to be able to get you over whatever sticking point you might have.
Yeah, that's great. And by the way, I wanted to mention that you guys are not getting you're not making money on this yourself. This is a hobby for you guys. It's not a business for you guys in that sense.
Right.
I mean, you have to kind of run it like a business.
It's an LLC, but there are no employees.
There are no employees. There's no cash paid out for anything other than – I'm the treasurer, so you asked the right person. We're paying our rent. We're paying our utilities. We're paying for supplies. We do put some soda in the fridge, but there's a can on top for donations. If you start drinking soda, throw a couple bucks in. Same thing in the shop. If you're going to use the drill bits up or you start grinding down down mills, throw some bucks in there. As we get enough members to get stabilized and actually get a little surplus cash, we aren't expecting a lot, then we'll go to the members and say, okay, what tools don't we have that we need? And then mm-hmm. the makerspace can start expanding itself and start growing and adding capabilities based on what people want but don't have the resources or the money to buy.
Well, you guys are great, and I really thank you. And I want to – let's plug that website again for people to find out more.
MilwaukeeMakerspace.org. Just no hyphens or anything.
MilwaukeeMakerspace.org. And I think – I'm sure Judith already has it posted on our Facebook page too. So you can go to the Larry Mueller Show Facebook page and find it there. Tom, Royce, thank you so much for being with us today. I really appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
It was great to be here.
And thank you for listening. Stay with us. Lots in store here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.